It's a mean age. But it is going to be a beautiful future as long as we don't f*** it up. I'm Brian McWilliams, and this is Mean Age Daydream, where I bring you unfiltered comedy, criticism, philosophy, and politics with a Mean Age Daydream. What is happening, everybody? It is me, Brian McWilliams, your favorite hungover person, joined today by two of my favorite hungover people, which is, of course, the fantastic power couple of Matt and Terry Kibbe, founders of Free the People. And Matt is also, of course, the host of Kibbe on Liberty. Welcome to Mean Age Daydream, you two. How you doing?
You're sounding a little rough, dude.
I look rough. I mean, it's everything's been rough. You know, I was telling you guys I was at the Rose Bowl yesterday. So, you know, I'm yelling and screaming and talking to the youngins and showing them I can still hold my liquor. And that never ends up good. It's always a painful experience. And currently today, my liver has been trying to escape my body. So I've got a lot of duct tape over my asshole right now just to make sure it can't get out.
We celebrated the millennial New Year's at a 3-day fish concert at the Miccosukee Indian Reservation, camping out with, 100,000 of our favorite hippie friends. So this is 23 years ago, right? When we were, quote, we thought we were young. And one of our friends was there and he was wearing a button down shirt. And
in Oxford.
And like one of the hippie girls walks by and looks at him and went, wow, it's so cool that people of your generation can still go out and party. And I was like, I'm not violent and I don't really like to hit people, but I really did want to smack her upside the head.
Just a little reminder to have some decorum.
Right. Yeah. Respect for your elders.
Right. Yeah. But I will say, you guys, I mean, we've got out plenty, in Austria, then in Vegas, you guys could definitely get out there and rock it. And as you said, on New Year's Eve, I guess you were opening up champagne magnums at 1 a.m. And
yeah, it fell into that category of seemed like a good idea at the time, which I think might be what my tombstone says.
At least you didn't try to saber it open. That's how you know you made a turn into the truly dangerous drinking.
Guilty as charged.
Did you? You sabered it?
No, oh, yeah. You didn't. She's got a saber.
That's awesome.
Of course, my wife has a saber. Yeah.
No, naturally. I mean, that's what.
I'll send you the video after the show.
She's actually a video. Oh, please do. There's a video of her coming after me with a saber.
That's every year on your anniversary, probably.
Yeah.
So tell me about, speaking of warfare, let's talk political warfare here on the Hill, because you were up there today, you said, for Rand Paul swearing in, and you wanted to give us a little insight into what's going on there and also what's going on with the speaker, because, obviously there's some contentious actions going on between more of the Freedom Caucus people and the standard bearers for the GOP party.
Yeah, well, the Senate swearing in was fairly boring and mundane, although there was a little bit of nobody really knew what to do. They were telling the senators that they couldn't leave the floor. Nobody really knew why. And it turns out that one of the newly elected senators had tested positive for COVID this morning. Ugh. And they didn't know what to do because he had to be sworn in, but they didn't know bringing him onto the floor. So they did him later and separate and cleared this wide space around him. And he had on, I don't know, 27 masks. It was really kind of hard to tell.
I would have loved if he rolled in the giant, the American Gladiators hamster ball bubble. Him in on that and swear him in.
I mean, if the government starts doing mandates, I think that's what they should mandate, that we all have to go into the hamster balls to get around.
But the Kibbes have a rule. So we live on Capitol Hill and we're not that far from the belly of the beast or Mordor or the Death Star, whatever your perfect metaphor is. And we have a strict rule because this town is swarming with undesirables, meaning politicians, and
they're a little bit like vampires.
Yeah, they try to get into the house, and once you let a vampire into the house, everything's goes sideways. So we have a list now of about 3 people in Washington who are elected officials that we'll let into our house, and 2 of them got sworn in today: Senator Rand Paul and Senator Mike Lee. I guess the only 2 senators that we sort of still do work with and stuff like that. And then there's Thomas Massie in the House now that Justin Amash is gone. We're sort of down to one, although we're checking out a couple of the new guys to see if they're worthy of that.
Chip Roy is.
Yeah, I was going to say, who do you who's the new class that you consider letting in the Kibbe household?
Chip Roy has been in the house, and he's more conservative. Like I would consider even Mike Lee, who obviously it's viewed as very conservative. His mindset is very libertarian. Particularly on things like war powers and surveillance and a lot of the things that we care a lot about. Chip Roy was back in the day, when he was a Hill staffer, he was one of the few people that would work with us at FreedomWorks when we were trying to stop the Wall Street bailout. And it was a classic example of all these Beltway libertarians, with some important exceptions, just taking a dive because it was a Republican president. Mm-hmm. And so I've always had a fond spot in my heart for a guy that would stand up on the committee of jurisdiction and come work with us, which is not in your best interest as a Republican staffer when a Republican president is trying to do that. Yep. So he's pretty good. But Rand and Mike are pretty close to... they're the best, right. and nobody's perfect, and I'm the only perfect libertarian, so
we all know that
everyone's gonna fail that.
Get the saber again, saber him now on the video in front of me. I want to see his blood.
Well, he did actually have to get me a Band-Aid after this. There was a slight sabering incident.
Really?
Do you remember getting me the Band-Aid?
Yes, okay. I do.
So
how big of a Band-Aid is it? Just is it a tourniquet or is it?
No, okay. Just a little one. It wasn't anything like the scene in Emily in Paris from last episode or last season. Anyway, what I was about to say was, as we said today, we always kind of go into the new terms of Congress, you know, the House and the Senate, with open hearts, I guess, right? Like we are positive and we want to think that everyone's going to do what they said they're going to do, or in some cases, not do what they said they were going to do. And so we keep that optimism as long as we can, usually until like the first vote. Mm-hmm. And then they show their true colors and we just give up.
Speaking of the first vote and to your original question, so we're sitting in Rand's office waiting to go down to the Senate floor for the swearing in thing. And we're watching CNN and the shit show that's rolling out in the House right now. And we won't actually know until tomorrow
if then
what's going to happen. But Kevin McCarthy, perhaps singularly the most feckless potential leader of the House of Representatives in the history of this august body, is having a really hard time getting the votes from Republicans to become Speaker. And he actually withdrew his bid last time. I forget when last time was, but 2-4 years ago, the last time there was a fight for Republican leadership. McCarthy's been trying to get this for a long time and he can't get it done. And it's sort of relevant to I think a lot of the drama that's going on, from the Twitter files to everything else. What's happening is that the Speaker's office, the position, not the person, is losing more and more power, going all the way back to the Tea Party, when for not the first time, but for the first time that a lot of members got elected without the help of leadership. Mm-hmm. And maybe against their own leadership, maybe the Republicans were actually working against some of those Tea Party activists that became senators. Like Mike Lee is a classic example of that. The leadership tried to kneecap him. They've been trying ever since
to take him out.
They tried this time with Evan McMullen. So if you look at what's going on with the speaker's race, the old speakers used to control the campaign budgets. They raised the money. They doled it out. So they owned your vote. And obviously you're going to vote for the speaker because that person decides whether or not you get to be reelected. And since especially the Tea Party, it's become more and more raucous. Remember, John Boehner got taken out by Thomas Massie and a mm-hmm. couple of these guys that are causing trouble today. And it's interesting to me because the response from leadership, both Republicans and Democrats, has been even more authoritarian. The more democratic the process gets, meaning that people get elected who don't fit the mold of a compliant Republican or a compliant Democrat, the more authoritarian the leadership gets. And this is where all of these multi-trillion omnibus, we wrote this thing on New Year's Eve and you're going to have to vote for Christmas Eve, or you're going to have to vote for it without reading it. Otherwise you don't get to go home for Christmas. That's where this whole process has come from. So I'm sort of curious to see if one, if McCarthy can pull it out, and two, if the people opposing him can extract some wildly crazy concessions like, hey, how about a regular budget process? Or why not actually allow amendments on the floor for people that have different opinions? Crazy, that, like insane stuff like that.
So, so it's been 100 years since the last time a speaker race had to go into multiple votes.
Really? Wow, yeah. I didn't realize that. Because, I know the last time, I think, was it Jim Jordan ended up pulling 15 or 16 votes right in the last round they did?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And so, like, and the one year, I think it was 1856 or 55, don't quote me because I'm not that great at history. It took until March for them to come up with a speaker. And historically, when the speaker races like this have been so challenging, it's when the country is so polarized, which is really, really fascinating. And from my standpoint, if it takes them until March to settle the speaker's race, that's great because Congress can't do anything until they elect a speaker.
Yeah.
So they can't do bad things.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, you know, talk about the polarization going on right now. And this will lead us into what the main topic we want to talk about, which is the Twitter files. Obviously, they've been released on various topics. Sadly, I was really hoping we were going to get the Fauci files because Elon's teasing them. And I'm like, God, come on, drop Tuesday. No such luck. So, of course, the second this podcast ends is when they will be released. But I mean, I look at everything that's happening with the country. You look at Twitter as this basically de facto center of conversation, even when it was being heavily censored and people knew about it, you were still on there because it's where you have to be. And I wonder about, just how much polarization has occurred because of the intentional censorship, because of this manufactured narrative that's being pushed through around COVID, around all these different topics. I mean, do you think that Twitter is to blame for a lot of what we're seeing right now politically and in divides in the country?
Well, it's fine. It depends what you mean by Twitter, because I'm starting to, and I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat about this point in a conversation.
Have you actually taken it off today?
I'm starting to think.
I just figured every hat is lined with tinfoil that you own.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason I'm wearing this hat. But like you realize that, like, I used to be a wild romantic. You go read back and read my last book. I was such a romantic about the power of social media and platforms like Twitter and Facebook to radically democratize everything, starting with knowledge and minority opinions like libertarians would have. We would finally have equal footing with the big guys. And that was absolutely true. And it very much led to the breakup of a lot of top-down institutions that were dictating how we thought and what we did. And, the one thing that didn't happen was politics. And I think my theory right now is that the Tea Party sort of started the Empire Strikes Back phase of social media when the government agents and the deep state and the political parties and whatever this blob is that controls this entire apparatus, they're like, we got to get a handle on this because people are starting to think for themselves. They're starting to speak their minds. And the Twitter files finally reveal something that we all knew and we've been talking about for years, but we didn't know to the extent to which the social media and government agencies, particularly the defense industrial complex type agencies, are working hand in glove. Like it may be indistinguishable where that censorship's coming from. Is it Twitter? Is Twitter captured? Are they sort of the regulatory bitches of government agencies that can destroy them if they want to? Or are they enjoying it just as much? And I don't think we know anymore because so many of these former like FBI agents are now working for social media companies.
Yep. I mean, you asked if Twitter was to blame. I don't think they had a choice, right? I mean, I think government just showed up and it's like, hey, I've got an offer I can't refuse, kind of like the mafia. Otherwise, you're going to end up with like a dead horse's head in your bed. So
yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said for that, and you talk about that, and then you see Joe Biden talking about how, well, we might have to look into this Elon Musk guy, and you look at Twitter, based on nothing, nothing, but these are, I mean, this is literally just a threat from the standing president, but the sitting president, but when you talk about the way in which they went about the censorship, whether or not they were, as you said, bitches, or whether they were, rah-rahing along with the government, I think that it's a two-part in that the government gave them an excuse to lean on their base instincts to be authoritarian censors. And that is, you know, so often in big tech, when you have the people on the left, you do see them leaning towards authoritarianism, leaning towards censorship of any speech they deem to be not in their best interest or not in the best interest of quote unquote humanity, whatever, you know, their vision of humanity is. And unfortunately, as we know, with the left, it tends to be these social causes, social movements that typically have no chance of really making a successful impact, but still they will die on the cross in order to push them forward. So I think it was the perfect excuse for them to really just kind of go hog wild.
Let me see if I can get this. I'm going to butcher it, but you guys can shame me for it. But there's a classic theory in public choice theory called Bootleggers and Baptists, which was the unholy alliance of people that didn't want you to drink and people that would profit if the government banned the legal sale of alcohol, that coalesced to come up with a regulatory structure that ultimately used the Baptist as sort of useful idiots for the purpose of the bootleggers.
Bootleggers.
I wanted to say bootlickers, but that's the Twitter staff.
I thought you were trying to figure out if you had to if the plural for bootleggers was like octopi. You know, you're trying to convert that in your mind.
Hold on, let me just take a drink and I'll be fine.
There you go. Yeah, what are you guys drinking, by the way? Manhattans.
Manhattans. Yep, with my favorite bourbon, Angel's Envy.
Ah, nice. Yeah.
Angel's Envy. My recipe leans heavily on bourbon and light on everything else because it adulterates what could be a nice dry cocktail, but
agreed. But, all right, so anyway, I interrupted you. Back to your bootleggers.
So back to this analogy, you have sort of this woke censorious ideology that I think truly believes that there's a correct way, that there is a science and that we can trust the experts and that they could actually sort of micromanage the language so that nobody's ever offended. It's this very scientistic, weird thing that's hard to get your hands around. And they're the useful idiots. They're the Baptists in this analogy, because that is a religion. And it can be quite mindless at times. And I think, you know, you see all these, you know, the woke tokenism coming out of the military and the CIA and the FBI and all these guys. And I think they're playing those cards as a way to basically censor political speech. So I think it's both going on at the same time. Ultimately, I don't think these social media companies get away with it without the government either forcing them or paying them, all these things that they're doing. Ultimately, it's still a libertarian story. It's not sort of an anti-big tech corporate story. But the combination is devastating. And by the way, what is the technical definition? Here goes my tinfoil hat thing. The technical definition of government control of the means of production. Look it up, kids. There's a word for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me add something.
You tell them?
You got to look it up. I'm not going to tell you what it is.
No, I have to Google it. socialism? I wanted to make it. Sorry, I'm putting on my slipper. My feet are freezing in my little den back here. That's not literally what I was doing right there.
Did you literally just get out of bed?
No. I got up. I showered. Then I was like, I'm still pretty tired. I lay back on the couch, watch some X-Files to prepare our tinfoil hats together. Yeah. You know, prepping it. And which actually, I was kind of thinking of something funny. Totally off topic. We'll get back to the Twitter files. But how, if you look at the FBI and what the FBI has become, right? I was trying to think, like, what iteration of the FBI is probably the most true to life these days? And I don't know. It may be maybe the X-Files, you know, maybe because the FBI is corrupt, the government's corrupt. Like, they really, you know, this might be the one, except that they made the FBI out to be heroes in the X-Files when, of course, they're all villains.
Well, now I'm going to keep going down this rabbit hole because what show were we watching? We were watching Jack Ryan. And
the new season
and Homeland would follow in the same category. And I really liked Homeland, but that this mythology that there's these public servants and what's his name in X-Files fits this category as well.
Fox Mulder.
Yeah. Like constantly doubted, constantly undercut, always looking around the corner and understanding what's really going on. His own boss is trying to kneecap him. His career is ruined. And I think, doesn't Fox Mulder ultimately get fired?
I think so. Watching after like 8 or 9 seasons when it kind of got wonky. And then, yeah, he left. So I think they canned him eventually.
But this whole, like, there's this genre of government agents who are these selfless heroes that are constantly being threatened by their bosses, but they're willing to sacrifice their careers and their lives and everything to get the bad guy and save America. The problem is, in the real world, there are no people like that. Yep. And it would be wildly irrational, and you would just get disappeared if you were like that.
In the real world, government is a cross between House of Cards and Veep.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I'm not sure which version is worse.
I think I'd be envious if we had a Veep situation full bore. I would think I'd enjoy that better. But yeah,
watch a Kamala Harris speech if you're doubting the metaphor.
But yeah, regarding the Twitter files, circling back around to that, right, and the aspect of control that was exercised. What was amazing to see in so many of the Twitter files, especially from the FBI's standpoint, was what they were flagging and how insignificant so much of it was. They had, I think, 80 agents working on it. And just, you know, to go into these infinitesimally small accounts and say, you have to remove this content, or you have to, you know, shadow ban it, or, you know, whatever it was, de-hashtag it, whatever these various terms are they had, just shows you, number one, we've got way too many FBI agents with apparently far too much time to investigate American citizens doing nothing wrong. And two, the fact that they're allocating this manpower in the pure and specific effort to censor is just, you know, such a punch in the gut, and really does confirm the worst fears about government agencies, especially these quote unquote deep state. I mean, the Twitter files have confirmed the deep state is out there and they are out to get you.
Yeah. So, like, I always use the metaphor of, I don't know if you ever went to the boardwalk when you were a kid and you played this game called Whack-A-Mole.
Yeah,
and
of course.
And the mole pops up and you try to whack it and you always miss it. And then you try to get another one. And this goes back to sort of the Tea Party, Ron Paul revolution metaphor. For the first time, we had people talking against the monolithic government narrative about the never-ending wars, about the Federal Reserve, about spending money we don't have, all that stuff. And, you know, those two movements were quite mashed up at one point. And then guys like Mike Lee get elected and Rand Paul gets elected, and a bunch of people got elected that they didn't want to get elected. And I would actually lump Donald Trump into this narrative. And they're like, and at some point they're like, wow, this social media thing is going to kill us. This this decentralization and technology is going to kill us. So they've been working at least since 2018, when Mark Zuckerberg testified before Congress. I think that they've been growing this insanely large apparatus, and the Twitter files expose just how many FBI agents were reading the jokes of some dude. Yep. With 15 followers in what was clearly a sarcastic comment, which is what Twitter is for, after all. And they're like, this guy must be stopped.
Yeah,
like, what is going on? So it is, like, to Terry's point, it's somewhere between House of Cards and Veep, because you can't tell. What was that? Did you know the movie Burn Before Reading?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it, but I've seen it.
That's actually probably worth
reading. It's a better, and that's Coen Brothers' movie about the ineptness of the deep state and their clownish pursuit of things that they don't understand, and it's all ridiculous. So, I think all of these things come to real life, and we should be freaked out, but I also think it means that they're scared to death that people with alternative views, particularly liberty views, are actually getting traction and winning. And we shouldn't just be pessimistic about what's going on. We should say, like, wow, they're so freaked out. This is such a ham-fisted way to try to censor the American people that they must be panicked, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think so completely. I mean, it almost reminds me of what's going on in China right now, because we're seeing China crack down, obviously, on social media. They crack down on gaming. And my theory, again, this is my tinfoil hat, but I think it holds up, was that they closed down the gaming platforms and limited the amount of time people could game, because that was where, because of the social media censorship, that was where people could actually talk and interact and share their thoughts and feelings and be unhindered. So you look at now what's happening in the U.S. government, the efforts to censor. And I said, you know, I agree completely. I think they are terrified of the power of what's happening there. But at the same time, I think you're also seeing the concrete maneuvers that they've made, like to lean in with regulatory, you know, powers like with Facebook, to undermine the ability of new startup companies to emerge and you know, have success in the space. And I think this is a very intentional act. And there's a reason that, not that I'm a huge fan of, you know, trying to break companies up or saying that the government should get involved, but I think there's a very specific reason why, despite some calls to investigate Facebook and stop them from buying up all these other social media platforms, they're more than happy to have them do it, because they're working so tightly in conjunction with them that it's just easier for the government to operate with one that controls eight than to have to go after and whack-a-mole them, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
I've had a saying that I recently modified, but for years I've said that conservatives have always feared the power of big government, and progressives or liberals have always feared the power of big business, but libertarians have always feared when big business and big government collude. And the Twitter files and all of this prove libertarians right. But I realized that I have to amend my statement that I've been using for years now, which is that conservatives used to be concerned about the power of big government, and progressives used to be concerned about the power of big business. And now they're just more, like you said, more than happy to exploit it and work together to just make it more bad. How's that?
Yeah. Ever more potent.
Ever more potent.
I wonder how many of those lockdown soy boys regret that Pfizer tattoo.
Oh God, I know. The one guy that had the giant COVID molecule or whatever with the you know, just embarrassing.
That's almost as bad as naming your daughter Daenerys.
Oh God, I know. The number of people I saw. I mean, we were naming our kid, like we named her Vale, V-A-L-E, our new daughter. But yeah, looking through the baby names, because we're like, we just want to avoid so many. Let's see what the worst are. Jesus Christ. People have no creativity, nor the power of individual thought is just completely lost. And critical thinking. Like, maybe I shouldn't name my kid this stupid thing. But let me ask you this. So we're talking about how I also am scared, but white-pilled in regards to people waking up to the power of censorship and government collusion, right? I'm very white-pilled on that. I'm hoping people are going to wake up, but at the same time, it does give me a lot of worry in regards to the Twitter files that are exposing what's happened. And then you look at the power of Google, which just controls so much of everything we do, the search results, YouTube, you know, all these other different avenues, even your emails. You know, there was that scandal where supposedly they weren't letting emails come through from conservatives. That power is still unchallenged. And we are not seeing any Google files come out anytime in the near future that I can tell. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? You know, how prolific is this? And what do you think
when is Elon going to be able to buy Google? And then we'll know. Then we'll know for sure.
I was reading about an hour ago the latest tranche of the Twitter files, not the Fauci files, but Matt Taibbi, is that how you say his name?
People keep correcting me. Taibbi.
Taibbi.
Yeah.
And as an aside, Matt Taibbi and some of these other guys who are heroes in the Twitter files, these are guys that used to piss all over me when I was a Tea Party leader.
Oh, sure.
And I think it's kind of awesome, because I think the new political divide is between authoritarians and anti-authoritarians. And I love to work with people that I would otherwise disagree with on stuff. But he released a tranche about an hour ago, and this is not new news, but you ask about Google, but Google, Facebook, and Twitter, we're all part of the same communications loop with the FBI, the CIA, and some other government agencies, including
DHS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and including like acronyms from the administration that I don't even recognize. So they were all part of this from day one. So, of course, Google's not going to release those internal records, but Elon Musk has them because they're all CC'd on the same emails. So I think we're going to find out what they've all been doing. And it's like it's classic monopolist behavior, sort of pandering to the regulators to make it more and more difficult for the next upstart company to come up and challenge them. You can't imagine the army of lawyers they have managing their relationships with the government right now. It's yeah. It would be impossible for a startup to compete in that world.
Well, you think about also over in the UK, you know, or maybe it's actually the broader EU, I think now with their specific laws on hate speech and what you can and can't say, and, you know, all these different rules for and regulations that companies have to go and enforce on social media. I don't know how you would possibly do it if you're a small company coming up. Like, you know, there's one company or one social site called Retalk that I was working with. And, you know, it's a growing site, but still, you know, he's based in Hungary. And I have to wonder, like, as this site grows, man, how are you going to keep up? You know, how would you possibly pay for the, you know, the people, the AI, the people to go through and comb it on top of lawyers, on top of all these other things to deal with the regulations as the site grows? You know, finding that equilibrium has got to be almost impossible.
The other thing is the money trail, right? So then... And part of this was revealed where the government was actually paying or reimbursing mm-hmm. Twitter, depending on what your preferred nomenclature is. And that was news to me. But I, even if there wasn't such a direct financial compensation for obeying the rules of the government game, the government itself and certainly government contractors like pharmaceutical companies, they're spending the majority of the bucks on these social media sites. So
they're like the government is like the largest advertiser.
Yeah. Mm. So even if it's not like under the table, sort of here's some cash, do what we say. There's huge financial incentive for these guys to play along. And I would expand that. Like we talk about the corporate media. Well, I think the corporate media is basically bought and paid for by the government at this point. So we're bitching about corporate media, but it's really just it's like Pravda 2.0, something like that.
You see that so often also just with the rotating door between presidents. Yeah, the White House and the media is a constant churning right. door where it's just in and out. I mean, you saw it constantly with, you know, Bush, Obama, everybody. So then you go, all right, not only do you have media members going in and out, but as we see now with social media, with the deep state, you have members of, you know, the former head of the CIA is now off, you know, the head of the FBI is now with Twitter. He's now at MSNBC speaking on behalf of, you know, whatever interests are out there to support. It's 100% something that I think has been exposed as being untrustworthy to the population. And that's where I think the new Twitter, though, should all the, you know, all the censorship be removed. Let's trust Elon's going to do that, right? We don't really know, but let's say he's going to do it. I think it's going to force mainstream media to be more honest. Because yeah. you're going to see a real-time reflection of people's honest opinions, of counterfacts to this prevailing narrative that's being pushed through. And I think it's going to either force them to be better or people will see that it is that Pravda, that we do live in the same society where we're just being fed this wad of horseshit all the time.
This is when you get to use your favorite word.
Disintermediation. Terry finds me. Terry finds me every time I use that. It means the same thing you just said, but you could also call it like the Joe Rogan effect, because I think the only way that this information cartel sustains itself is that if everybody's playing the same game, and if Twitter's not, and if Joe Rogan's not, and if there's more and more places where people can get an honest, unfiltered take on things. I mean, I think that's, if you want to understand the Joe Rogan phenomenon, that's it in a nutshell. He was the first guy to respect his audience enough to ask honest questions or respect his guests and let them talk and just explore ideas that he found curious. That used to be, maybe, I don't know if it ever was, but that was what the media was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And now, because of these same technological forces that I've been so optimistic about, that it has unleashed this. And I think I forget my Star Wars analogy, but, you know, the Empire Strikes Back, but whatever the next one is, we're coming Return back. I think it involves Ewoks, right?
Yeah. The Return of the Jedi. Yeah.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of fucking free speech Ewoks out there.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. Actually, I was going to ask you guys in your efforts, you know, you do a lot of outreach and meet with a lot of people, obviously to, you know, to fundraise for the work at Free the People. Have you found that it's getting a little easier after the release of the Twitter files to talk to people? Have you found more people are saying, you know what, this is something we have to invest more in? You know, are people's doors opening? Are the phones ringing a little bit more often?
Honestly, I don't think investors know about it yet. I think it's got to trickle out, and people have to sort of realize the Fauci files may in fact break that through. But you remember, most of media is not covering the Twitter files, and so unless you're
you're
on Twitter, you don't even know that this outrageous stuff's happening.
I mean, we are gonna like get out there on the road again in January and February a lot and start meeting with our donors. And yes, this is a great example of and proves what we've been telling them for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years since we've been doing this, that you can't rely on these other platforms, that you have to have another way forward, and Free the People is that honest and amazing path.
Yeah, we've been struggling with this because we've you know, we're not right-wing clickbait at all. Our stuff is specifically designed to reach people outside of either libertarian or conservative or constitutional bubbles. But I am 100% convinced that our content is suppressed, and we have plenty of evidence to see that that's true.
Yeah, I mean, we can absolutely see it now when we were looking at the end of year at all of our metrics. I mean, our audience is growing, but our views and everything and engagement is going down. It's just right there. It's pretty amazing to see.
Well, do you guys ever get your content pulled? Because I know, you know, we'll get regular strikes. Like, we've had a strike against our YouTube channel that just keeps getting replaced because they find as soon as they disappear a strike, they add a new one on for whatever, you know, something from 3 years ago. Have you had a lot of that where you've had any flags or anything pulled down?
I mean, we've had a couple flags, but we kind of pride ourselves on not having been censored or pulled down. I mean, they will sometimes challenge ads that we're going to run. They once challenged an ad that we were going to run that was, it was last Christmas, and it was a t-shirt with Santa on it. And it said, "Don't hurt people and don't take their stuff." And they said that that violated their community standards.
Why? Well, this will anger the Jews and no Santas.
Or we want to take people's stuff. I don't know, but.
Right. Yeah.
The one, like, I would say before COVID, we would have never had a problem with explicit censorship. They would put warnings, and I think this was a Facebook thing. Anything where we were like doing a history lesson on Mao's Cultural Revolution, they'd put a warning: "This is violent." Flag over top our video, which kills your views. But the one video that actually got pulled down for a while, we finally got it put back up. But it again killed the trajectory of the growth was an interview I did with Ron Paul pretty early on where he just went off on masks. And this, here's a doctor who knows something about the history of why you use masks and why you don't. And he just went off on that. And that video was killing it, but YouTube pulled it down.
Right. That is the one.
There's no surprise because I'm sure the government said, "Hey, this has to be pulled down." And even though Biden's current head of COVID, the COVID czar, just said there's no study that's ever existed in which proves that masks are effective against this. Yeah. That's a straight fact. It's been the same fact for years. But your video pulled down, censorship all over Twitter. You couldn't tweet about it. You could talk about it. I mean, our videos got pulled down for the same thing. Right. And it just, you know, I don't know how many people are seeing that. Because again, you have to go to Twitter. It wasn't covered in the mainstream media.
Right.
So, but I have to think at least on some level, people are seeing just what the truth is being reflected in their everyday lives. Because I haven't seen a huge uptick in mask wearing. I don't know if you've seen it in DC. Of course, yeah, maybe there they would. But even in LA, I'm not seeing a ton of people adopt masks, even though they're saying the new round of COVID's out there. So I think people have woken up to that fact. And I'm praying that when the Fauci files come out, that we're finally going to see a little bit more, hopefully, evidence to talk about the vacations, quote unquote, since I don't want to combine these words to get this video pulled, and heart issues, you know, and the efficacy with children, all these other things where, I mean, in the Bills, who are they playing? The Bills game last night on the NFL. Bengals. The Bills Bengals. I mean, a 24-year-old player in the prime of his youth, you know, a tip-top physical athlete, keels over and has a heart attack in the middle of a football game. I've never seen that before. And I'm not going to say it explicitly, but I would be surprised if he wasn't very much full of a certain mRNA-based substance.
Right. And it was fascinating reading the articles today about it, where they were coming up with like medical excuses as to how it could have happened. Like if he was hit in the chest at like this one particular like 40 millisecond moment when his heart was beating in such a way, that could have caused it.
Right. Well, I was, and of course, Jupiter and Mars had to be lined up, and Uranus and, was, you know.
Well, let's not talk about Uranus. But.
That's a different podcast.
We were
that's Kibbe on Liberty After Dark.
So again, like,
are you going to talk about the guy we passed on the street today?
No, I was going to talk about the CNN clip we were watching. Oh. In. So I don't watch CNN, but we're sitting in Rand's office, and this will probably ruin his.
Yeah, why political. Does Rand have it on just to get him fired up to do battle or something? You know, when football players are whacking each other on the helmets? It's just
I mean, angry. I read the New York Times and the Washington Post every morning before I get out of bed just to piss me off to get up. So
every day I jump out and stomp the ground with Rand.
But there is like that story that Terry told. Like, how would you even know this story about? I forget what they call it, but this. This particular theory that if you hit the guy in the heart in exactly mm-hmm. the right way, it can trigger a heart attack. CNN is contributing all their time to this. And I'm like, why? Like, I get that you would be like, we're very concerned about this guy and our hearts go out to him and prayers. But it seemed like the corporate media was out there driving a narrative to prevent people from saying, well, that's weird.
Yeah,
we should probably investigate that. And I do think that there's some sort of broader government capture of media going on right now that needs to be exposed. And I maybe we will never expose it. But getting back to this idea of we believe in markets and competition. I think as long as Elon holds strong. As long as Joe Rogan can't be fired from Spotify because otherwise Spotify goes out of business, you're going to see a dramatic shift away from the already dying corporate media dinosaurs to places where we're allowed to ask those questions. And I don't think you should jump to conclusions, but I think you should be allowed to ask those questions specifically because the government science industrial complex is completely devoid of credibility. So we got to do it. I wish that we trusted scientists enough to do it for us.
Yeah, it's kind of sad then that I think that's going to be a big point of fallout from all this, from the COVID era, is that what can you trust now? You know, we were told the experts, trust the experts, trust the experts. Well, they were lying to us the entire time. The experts have been wrong from, you know, every single moment of COVID, basically. So what experts are there to trust? And I mean, there's probably going to be some people that trust the wrong people, you know, like who is that Liver King guy, you know, who's all roided up and selling, I don't even know, supplements. Some people are going to trust the Liver King because that's their alternative to the government narrative now.
Yeah.
Fine. But in the free market of ideas, you know, you should still have good science rise to the top based on good data and showing efficacy of a product or a solution. So we shall see. But talking about the death of the expert class and how the government, I think, has killed it off. We did see so many experts in cardiology get removed from Twitter, get censored for just expressing opinions or giving the CDC's own data. And that was being censored. So when you see that happening, too, I think there's no way around people going, okay, we now have to find alternatives, to your point. We have to find alternative sources for news and media and everything else. And I wonder if there is going to be some other alternative science coalition that can be created that'll pop up out of this of scientists and you know, medical professionals that actually want to be taken seriously and want to escape this you know, government-controlled narrative.
Well, you know, the whole metaphor about is media completely financially captured by government? You can ask the same thing about science and particularly medical research. And this goes back to Fauci. And by the way, this was Republicans that did this, weaponizing NIAID to be this center of biosecurity back when Dick Cheney was vice president. And that's when all this stuff happened. That's when Fauci became the Fauci that we know and distrust so much. He retired, but the new guy, whoever, I forget his name, but he's Fauci number two.
Yeah. I'm not sure who just, what his name is. He just stepped up.
There's a complete centralization of funding for research on these subjects. And either the government finances it, or if the government refuses to finance it, it probably cuts off whatever private funding is left. So you have this complete centralization of science, which is anathema to what science is supposed to be. So I think there's a reason why people go to Joe Rogan, who's a comedian, to get their science, because he's a more credible scientific researcher, because he'll have guys on that are willing to sort of break from the cartel. So I think it still works, but it's not going to come from the scientific community, the formal one, the university based system, because they're all captured.
Well, it's very much related, but we've been talking about this for a while, the whole big sugar and big soda. Coca-Cola has been funding research for years that says, well, you can eat whatever you want, you just have to exercise more. Mm-hmm. And then we just read yesterday, a guy's writing a book, and I don't remember his name, but I double checked his math because I'm an engineer and I like doing that weird shit. And he came up and he said that he took like the amount of money that's used from food stamps. What are they called now? SNAP.
SNAP. Mm-hmm.
That the amount of money from SNAP that is spent on soda, right? And then figured out Coca-Cola's market share of soda and discovered that like 40 or 45% of Coca-Cola's revenue comes from food stamps, from SNAP. So they're basically getting all of their money from the government and then funding studies that shows that sugar's okay. And, you know, the whole food pyramid is all fucked up, and it all just kind of goes back to, as with everything, follow the money, and it always goes back to government. Always. Right.
Well, it's like the NIH, you know, after all of this, all the lies and the censorship and the completely wrong predictions and handling of COVID had been exposed, $45 billion, or maybe it was $48 billion, was just in the omnibus bill to fund the NIH.
Right.
So clearly, you know, no accountability. Well, clearly, give them more money then. But
that was the takeaway. I forget what it was called, but it was a national security memo from the Biden administration. And it was about how we're going to respond to the next pandemic. And it basically doubled down on every failed policy that we have right now, because the lesson from lockdowns is that we didn't lock down early enough. The lesson from testing is that we didn't test early enough.
Yeah.
Or enough.
The lesson from vaccinations and boosters is that we needed them earlier. And so they're going to double down on this whole scientific paradigm, which is going to lead, shockingly, to massive new funding for all of these agencies that are feeding off of the panic and the failure and all the things that they've done.
And wasn't it moving it all under Homeland Security?
It explicitly moves it into the defense world, which sort of gets back to this whole biosecurity paradigm. This wasn't a health paradigm. This was a biosecurity paradigm that led to gain of function, all that stuff. We're still going to get this video striked, by the way.
Oh, I mean, without a doubt. Well, it's like, it's amazing how these people still are doubling down, as you said, and tripling down. When you look at China right now,
right,
which has been the hardest lockdowns, continuous lockdowns, you know, checking the social credit scores, enabling where you can't go. And yet they're having the biggest breakout that they've seen, I think, in the country. And it's currently happening after all these years of doing it. So, I mean, you've got clear examples. But one thing I just want to circle back to, you know, I was talking about these, you know, very well-known cardiologist, I'm blanking on his name, but he had basically had his medical license threatened to be removed. And this has happened to numerous people that had spoken out against COVID. And that's where I was kind of floating the idea of, do you think that there is a possibility of somebody saying, look, we can't have the American Medical Association be the solo truth, you know, the arbiter of what is good medicine anymore and who's a doctor anymore, because they're taking people's medical licenses away for stating the truth. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think we're there yet? Do you think it'll happen?
You know, well, we're already there in a sense for people that can afford to. You can opt out of the healthcare system and go concierge medicine. And if you actually want to get a doctor, and I suggested this when they fired all of the nurses and doctors who were previously infected with COVID and survived, so they had natural immunity. You have this army of folks out there with all this incredible talent. I think the same thing's going to happen with the sort of caste system of all of these medical association accreditation and all that stuff. Let's just break out of the system. And unfortunately, that leaves a lot of people stuck in the system. But that, again, that's how markets might work. Let's show that there's an alternative way to get your health care. And oh, by the way, it's going to be radically cheaper once it becomes mainstream.
But the problem, though, with that is that if you aren't accredited by these people and you practice medicine, you will go to jail.
Yeah.
So you have to change. Exactly. Like, government has to change. And that's, I don't see that happening.
Or,
so
you,
that's a problem.
Or you fly to Mexico.
Or Guatemala.
If you think about not concierge medicine, but medical tourism, I've actually gotten a lot of dental work done in Guatemala because my wife doesn't love me enough to.
You are so full of shit.
I might have to get a crown, or I might go to Mexico to get a crown.
No, if you like, honestly, here's an advertisement. If you do need to go get a crown, don't go to Mexico. Go to Guatemala with us. University.
Right. There you go.
Yes, University. put together a trip. Keen in Guatemala City has done Matt's crown, and they are amazing.
They're the best.
They're like it was a better experience than the crown he had done here in DC, and a fraction of the cost. And they have great rum in Guatemala. So let's do a trip.
I count me in. I need to get the tooth done. So we'll figure it out. And I'm there. I actually have I had an old client that's from Guatemala for an interesting organization called Yihad en Unum. And they were a Catholic priest who went around and found victims of the Holocaust that were murdered outside of Auschwitz, you know, like shot in fields and Roma. So, interesting stuff, if I do say so myself. So what do you think is going to be forthcoming? Let's do a little predictions here, right? We don't know what's happening with the Fauci files. What do you think is going to be in them? Let your conspiracy mind run wild. What do you think we're going to find out? And just how evil is this going to get?
So we were talking about science fiction analogies earlier, and my ultimate science fiction analogy is Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. And if have you watched the show? So
yeah, I haven't seen the latest season. I watched the first three seasons.
You have to watch the first season to get this analogy. You have a rogue government agency doing wildly experimental things to stop this big threat from somewhere else, in this case, the Soviet Union. And in the process of these mad science experiments, they unleash hell on Earth. And I think Fauci is sort of the tip of the iceberg when it comes to what was actually going on. And my own prediction, which is based on nothing other than knowing how Washington works, is that they're going to throw Fauci under the bus and they're going to sacrifice him so that people with far more power than he had will not be exposed for what I believe. Like I actually believe that our taxpayer dollars financed some really dangerous research that led to the death of millions of people. Mm-hmm. And I think that the powers that be are going to want to cover that up. So I think Fauci is going to go down. And I think that we may or may not know who's ultimately responsible.
Yeah. I mean, that's how government works. You never know. But
Terry's like, my husband's so crazy.
Well, yeah. I was going to talk about Beaglegate for a second.
Oh, let's talk about Beaglegate.
Oh, yeah. Horrible.
Yeah, so we're actually having tomorrow, Matt's recording a Kibbe on Liberty with Justin from White Coat Waste Project. Where he's going to talk about all of this. And then we learned today.
And their thing's all about exposing the abuse of animals in government research.
And which Fauci did a lot of. And we just learned today that not only did he focus on beagles, because beagles are like so compliant that they're easy to experiment on, which is just so awful.
Yeah, people love you so much that they're great to do horrible science experiments on.
But he has also done experiments, and they've done experiments with cats. And that really pissed us off.
Yeah, so that's...
You are cat people. That's for sure. I was going to say, I've got a I'll volunteer my one dog. He is a son of a bitch who has literally torn my ball sack open. And yet he is not dead because I'm a saint. A fucking saint. That's an awkward story. I'll save for an in-person drinking time.
But yeah, that should probably be a video, to be honest with you.
In slow motion.
You know, actually, Jason Stapleton, if you know Jason, has seen a picture of my my ball scar. Actually, it was at his, and I was at his wedding. We were out drinking at his wedding, and I showed, snapped a shot in the bathroom to prove it really happened. But anyway,
well, at least you didn't drop your pants like in the main restaurant.
No, I was tempted. I was tempted. So, I think there's going to be, to your point, I think the Beagle stuff could definitely come out. I think you're going to see a lot of very self-serving, and especially Twitter had a fans of Fauci or Fauci's fan club Stack chat or Slack chat as well.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see them censoring just absolutely ridiculous things on behalf of this man, you know, and it's going to be the Beagle stuff, censoring the horrible things he did. It's going to be anything about Wuhan and research, anything about gain of function, and everything tying him financially to any benefit. That's what I think we're going to find out more than anything, is that they're really protecting the financials.
Will Amazon still be allowed to sell the prayer candles with Fauci's image on them?
I wish I had bought one of those just to light it on fire, you know, hire a prostitute, put it up her butt.
St. Fauci.
Elon, this wasn't new news, but it's bigger news when Elon retweets the fact that Fauci's wife is actually the ethics czar at NIH that would oversee whether or not he was overstepping the bounds. Because the whole question of gain of function research, there were strict prohibitions on this, and it's suggested that Fauci slipped around those to do those things. And I believe it was in 2012 he wrote an academic article that it's amazing how open they were, and no one was paying attention back when we should have been paying attention. But Fauci actually writes that some people believe that gain of function research could be catastrophic should there be a lab leak. Well, I say the risk is worth it. And so if you think about that in the context of what he was open, not what he was saying behind closed doors, but what he was openly saying.
Yeah.
And then you see what he did to Martin Kulldorff and Jay Bhattacharya and calling them fringe epidemiologists. Mm-hmm. He's covering his ass. And I got to believe where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, I would be, for one, I know it's not going to solve the problem, but I still would love it if they do throw him under the bus. I'll take great pleasure in it.
I mean, there's a reason why he retired.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a reason why you could see they slowly were pushing him out of the spotlight as leading up to this as well. You know, it's no coincidence. Right. So yeah, he's going to go under the bus. And who knows, maybe he'll end up in Arkansas, having been quote unquote robbed of nothing with a bullet in his head. Who knows? We'll just have to wait and see.
he might do the Russian vacation and do a slip and fall out a window. Who knows?
Right, yeah. Get defense traded. Well, guys, tell everybody where they can find you, everything you do. I want to thank you for coming on the show. You guys are awesome. So where can people find you and follow you?
So you can find us on YouTube, Free the People channel. Our website is freethepeople.org. You can follow both of us on Twitter at mkibby and at tkibby. We're everywhere. You don't have to look that hard to find us.
that's the problem. When you want to avoid them, they're still there.
Unless, you know,
we're bad.
Unless they're suppressing us, you can find us everywhere.
Yeah.
But follow us on YouTube is the best way to see all of us.
Yeah. And if something happens, we are not suicidal at this very moment.
All right. Well, thank you both again, Matt and Terry Kibby, Free the People. Check it on out. And of course, Kibby on Liberty. Good stuff. And thank you both again for coming on. I love you. Cheers. Sure. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Let's drink in person soon.
Oh, I can't wait. Cannot wait. All right. That's going to wrap up the show, guys. From me, Brian McWilliams, from the Lions of Liberty Network, and from Mean Age Daydream, keep those electric eyes on me, babe, and keep that ray gun to my head.